Hello, this is Sharon Steitler, the bird chick, and I am here with non-birding Bill.
Hello.
And it is our goal to podcast, as always. This is a birding podcast that you can listen to. It's one of the few that are out there. There is also
good.
This...
I was afraid this is one of those birding podcasts you couldn't listen to.
Well, there are some that don't update. I mean, there's no set birding, except for Bird Note, but it's only like 2 or 3 minutes long.
Sure.
But this week I will say that This Birding Life released a new podcast, which is the Bill Thompson Birding Podcast.
Good.
So you should definitely check that out. So I'm going to spring something on you, non-birding Bill.
Okay.
I want to try doing segments.
Okay.
So I want to try and structure the podcast.
Sure, we're only 205 episodes in. Why not try something
new?
Well,
we should evolve over time.
Sure.
We'll just... I'm not asking you to come up with, like, songs for each of these segments. But I'm just saying, it's like I'm listening to other podcasts out there, and it's like, maybe we should organize this a little bit more.
Okay.
So we'll have news. We'll have... You're going to love this. I'm going to bring back the jobs.
Okay.
And also, we'll have questions that you can ask. So let's get to news.
All right.
I thought it should be more like...
Yeah, because we're transmitting it via Morse code to ships at sea.
All right, this week in birding news. Okay. Sexy man John Hamm...
That's the actual headline?
He swooped in to help a hummingbird.
Okay.
And it's very cute to watch this happen. You don't really see the bird. You just see John Hamm and a bunch of other guys.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is a guy who's on the TV show Girls, and also this video was put out on Instagram by a producer on Girls, which I think more disturbing is John Hamm going to be on an episode of Girls?
Probably.
But
if he is, I hope he plays the crummy boyfriend that some character can do better than.
You've never watched an episode of Girls, have you?
No, oh, yeah, I've seen an episode of Girls.
Okay.
But no, that's just how women, especially comedic women, cast John Hamm. Is he's the bad boyfriend that they can do better than.
It's not that he's the bad boyfriend, he's the stupid boyfriend. That's what I love about John Hamm, is that he appears to get cast as like, oh, you're pretty but stupid.
Yeah.
Except in Mad Men, and there he's just, you know, raging alcoholic womanizer.
Sure.
Who really knows how to wear a suit and keep his shaving on point. But no, he's...
Is there a story to go with this story?
No, there is an actual story. Okay. It was in Audubon and the Dodo, so you know it's true. Anyway, if you...
John Hamm saved the Dodo?
No.
What an amazing job. Good work, John Hamm.
You know a story I just could not deal with this week?
No.
The Dodo may have been smarter than we actually thought. I just don't care about that anymore. It's an extinct bird. Yeah, I'm sure it was great, but... Unless you can get me an accurate animation of how a dodo would have walked around and stuff, I'm not interested anymore.
Wow, way to lay it on the line with Big Dodo there. You're really taking a stand.
It's just one of those things where every week's like, whoa, we have a new bird dinosaur today. And it's like, we have a new bird dinosaur every day. That's great. I like looking at bones. I'm on board with dinosaurs, but I'm just so tired of these like amazing headlines that I'm supposed to read of like, new bird dinosaur. Yeah, we kind of got it. There are lots of them out there. Start... Why doesn't someone just make me a field guide of bird dinosaurs?
Wait, okay, I'm sorry. Wait, you want a field guide to bird dinosaurs?
Yes.
What are those words? You cannot just put random words together and call it a sentence.
Why can't we have a bird dinosaur field guide?
What are you talking about?
Look, there are all these dinosaurs out there. You're going to go to a museum. You're going to go see them.
Yeah.
You want to know. And then people are out there making these artist renderings of them.
Okay, you know, when you go to a museum and you see, like, a natural history museum and they have, like, the bones there, there's a little placard in front of you that tells you what
Look,
you're looking at.
There's a new frickin' bird dinosaur every day. The museums don't have time to get those in there right away or get the information out. I want to keep track of all the bird dinosaurs that are showing up and all the illustrations that are happening.
Okay, now, I'm concerned that I might be having a stroke right now. What you want is a field guide to extinct animals that you can't see even in a museum.
How many field guides do I have here to countries that I haven't been to and quite possibly never will go to. I mean, the sad thing is...
That's an excellent question. I'd like to remind you...
The less likely I am to visit all the countries I want to visit.
Stop. I want you to hold on to that sentence.
What is this, a Republican debate?
I want you to hold on to that idea. I want you to hold on to that idea while I remind you that you were taking me to task for wanting to buy new DVDs when we have too many DVDs in the house that are on one shelf as opposed to... The Birds to Guatemala that you have.
All right.
Birds of Panama.
I'm not even looking at all of our CDs right now, and I see 1, 2, 3 shelves of our CDs. DVDs.
Yes, but it's on one bookcase.
It's on 2 bookcases.
And so your deal is that you have too many bird books for birds that you are never going to see.
I might. You never know.
And you want an additional book for extinct animals that you will never see.
Hey, look, with this whole de-extinction thing, who knows what's going to happen?
There is not a de-extinction thing.
People are trying to bring back that passenger pigeon.
That's not happening.
No, but I mean, at the same time, the way my life works out, like, who knew I was going to go to Guatemala or Kazakhstan? Those were, like, the first two places I went outside of the U.S., and they were all random. I mean, Israel, that was random. My next trip to Israel is not random. You can travel along with me, and we can see the raptor migration this fall. Hashtag Wildside Nature Tours.
What the hell were you talking about at the beginning of this story?
That... John Hamm.
Yeah.
No, but that... I was like, I get ridiculous field guides in the mail. I recently got a field guide in the mail. Let's see. Stall for time.
How's that structure working out for you, Sharon?
Great. Where did my... Oh, there it is. Oh, that's not it. Sorry, the X-Wing miniature game boxes are all on top of this new book.
This is not Foley work, people. This is my life. This is really happening.
I just got a book in the mail. Waterfowl of North America, Europe, and Asia. That doesn't include South America or Australia. It's just waterfowl from those three areas. And how intense Amazing. Is this book? It's got a page of nothing but swan heads. So, I mean, we have intense guides like that. So I don't see why it's out of the realm of possibility that we could have, hey, these are the projected dinosaurs for this year. It could come out every year. This is what we currently know about bird dinosaurs. This is the field guide for them. And then you buy it every year because you want to get the updated version.
Do you have no idea how insane you sound right now?
I have seen other bird books come out that are more insane. I mean, come on. A book strictly about how to identify birds by molt came out. In 1 year, 2 books on how to identify birds that had absolutely no pictures in them came out. This could Right. work.
Actual birds that are still alive.
The idea that someone would think that people would be like, oh yeah, I'm really going to buy a field guide on how to identify birds with absolutely no pictures in it. It's just all text. Yeah.
2 words, pile guide.
That's different. That's something you need to do research.
Sure.
You have to. The pile guide is the thing. Okay.
And so then, what you're suggesting is I would walk into Barnes & Noble and see this Valentine's Day gift for your girlfriend display, and it would have this book that you were talking about.
No, don't be ridiculous. No one ever gets laid with bird books or dinosaur books, but...
Okay. Keep digging that hole. This is our last podcast, after all.
Did I tell you that my gull guide... that I have from Houghton Mifflin Harcourt that was written by Howell is apparently worth quite a bit of money. I took it to the last Birds and Beers, and someone asked, how much do you want for this? And I was like, it's not for sale. I just bring bird books to start conversation and for people to take a look at. Sure. And like, you can't get this book anymore. It's out of print. It's like $500 online. And I was like, no, you're kidding. And then I went on to Amazon. Yeah, it's out of print. And there were 3 or 4 booksellers, and it was like $369 to $480 to buy this gull guide.
Yeah, that's how collectability works, is that nobody wants it, and then somebody wants it, yeah.
Yeah. So, see, these dinosaur books, they could be a huge moneymaker.
No, they're not moneymakers. Okay, let me explain this to you. When a book becomes more valuable, and it's like worth like $400, the writer and publisher doesn't get any of that. That's the bookseller. It's not like you have to cut them in for a percentage.
So what needs to happen is publishers need to become booksellers.
That's a fantastic idea. Why don't you get them on the phone?
That's what Amazon's doing. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. We can do this.
Because people go into bird book publishing for the fat, fat ducats.
Yes. Well, you know, the book that we got the most money on has been Disapproving Rabbits, and it was back before the big publishing bubble burst. But it was just like, here's a pile of money. Just take pictures. not even great pictures of rabbits and put captions underneath them. And here's some money. And now I look at, like, the books that, you know, you're offered now. It's like, hey, here's some money. Here's money. I don't know if it's good money, but if you write it, that's great.
Why were we talking about John Hamm?
He helped a hummingbird that was trapped inside a movie set.
Great. And from there, we got to bird dinosaurs and refiguring the publishing industry.
Well, that's because I was tired of the dodo.
Great work for the structure so far.
All right. Next news story is there's a really cool video from Hotspot Birding that you can watch. Mm-hmm. And it is slow-mo of a sparrowhawk going after a Eurasian jay. And it's very Matrix-y, and you should watch it.
Okay.
So, a sparrowhawk missed getting a Eurasian day. OMFG, it's cool. Okay. Next in the news is from the Daily Mail.
Okay.
Male San Martin birds are filmed trying to mate with a dead male, but the necrophilia must have been a case of mistaken identity. I bring this up for a couple reasons, because there's a meme that goes around of a swallow that's trying to help its mate, and everyone's like, oh, it's so great, it's so sad that its mate got hit by a car, and it's like, that's a hatchier male on the ground, and that's in a full-on male on top. And he's not trying to save it. He's trying to mate with that dead thing. Sure. And I just finally quit bringing it up. But this article touches on some of the reasons that why these San Martins might have been trying to, quote-unquote, mate with the dead Martin in the road. And they're like, well, maybe just the way the bird was laying in the road, it just looked like an acquiescence posture.
Sure.
So basically, it was laying there and asked for it. But anyway.
Well, no, I remember that, like, years and years ago, we were watching that documentary about the cane toads that were invading Australia. And they were talking about, like, their hormonal urge to mate. Like, even if a cane toad has been run over and is flat on the road, living toads will try to mate with it because that's how strong they're population instinct is.
And that's pretty much what you have going on with ducks in the spring. It's the exact same thing. The urge is right there. I mean, they would go for your shoe if it looked like
it's
a hen.
Don't try to anthropomorphize it. It's an animal mating instinct.
Yeah, so it's like one of the three remained on the ground close to the dead bird and guarded it against copulation from two other birds.
Right.
Then the guarding bird itself attempted to copulate with the dead bird. After 15 minutes of filming, the researchers collected the body and discovered it was a male.
Okay.
But anyway, it's...
That's why you have to be careful about anthropomorphizing animals.
It's a dodgy world out there. All right. Oh, and in other news, a pair of mute swans put on a pageant of horrors in Brooklyn as they looked like they were just kind of dabbling in the water, and really what they were dabbling and playing with was a dead raccoon.
Wait, what?
It's a pair of mute swans in Brooklyn, introduced species. Right. Perhaps they killed the raccoon, perhaps they found it, but it's people are watching these mute swans being beautiful, and they're also kind of swimming and doing that whole heart-shaped thing that they do with their heads. And really,
they're in the water.
They're in the water, and so is a raccoon.
Oh, okay.
That is no longer alive.
Oh, okay.
So, anyway, it freaked everybody out, because it was in Brooklyn, number one.
Swans are assholes, let's be honest about that.
Mute swans in particular are the biggest assholes.
Like, they're terrible birds. And yeah, they look beautiful when they're swimming, but if you have any other interaction with a swan, you're taking your life in your own hands.
I would like to remind people that two swans in Chicago, mute swans specifically, drown a kayaker.
Yeah.
Mute swans, they're non-native in North America. And yes, if you report them online, sometimes if there's a U.S. Fish and Wildlife representative or Department of Natural Resources representative reading that, they will go out and they will shoot
them. I'm just going to go on record right now. Fuck swans.
Not all swans.
No.
Hashtag not all swans, Bill.
All the assholes.
No, not trumpeters.
Bunch of jerks.
Not tundra swans. No. That's a very unpopular opinion. That's going to, like, knock you down.
Fine. I can take the heat.
No, I don't think you can. I don't think you understand how beloved you are out there.
I don't care. I'm gonna keep it 100.
100%?
Gonna keep it 100.
Actually, I had someone yesterday was on one of my programs, and they came up, and they said, are you the podcast lady?
Mm-hmm. I was like, you do the podcast.
I said, I am no lady. And they're like, yeah, you are. I've listened to it. I subscribe to it, but I listened to an episode. And I was like, thank you. That's why I wanted to have more structure.
Good.
All right, what
Working
else?
Working out great so far, let me tell you.
Hey, we've talked about necrophilia. We've talked about... All right. Well, you're the one who said you wanted to podcast.
I've never said that. That's a lie, and you know it.
All right, so our next story, it's basically a series of stories about how... I was just noticing as I was reading news this week, number one, I thought it was really adorable. The San Francisco Gates had, birders scramble to top record of spotting most species in a year. I honestly think that all the bitching online about saying, I'm really tired of hearing birders flock, is that they're actually trying to
You've
use
other
words.
You've made a change. Congratulations.
I don't think I'm the only one complaining about it.
Sure.
I think a lot of people have been tired of the birders flock trope.
Be the change you want to see in the world, Sharon.
But, so yeah, they're just talking to people who like to do big years. And then I saw...
Oh, scramble. Is that supposed to be an egg joke?
Ooh, that's a deep cut.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that. Yeah. Birders scramble. I was just thinking of like a Scooby-Doo run.
Sure, sure.
But no, they're talking about big years, and then there's always articles every single week of local bird club offers bird walks.
Yeah, I see that all the time.
I think they need to change the name of that, though. I think we need to stop calling them bird walks. I think we need to start calling them birding adventures. Because if you don't know what birding is, and you're like, oh, I'm going to walk, and birds, that just doesn't sound very exciting. But when you get out there and you're in it...
It doesn't sound very exciting, but it is completely accurate. Whereas if you described it as a birding adventure...
It is an adventure.
And you're walking through the woods.
Oh, it is an adventure. It's like today, I went out to my patch, and I was like, we've had some warm weather. Maybe we'll get some early migrants. Bada bing, bada boom, this brown bird flew in front of me. I'm like, you're not all the other brown birds. And it was a white-throated sparrow. That was exciting and an adventure.
Sad.
No, it's not. It's like... You see the wind apps that are out there, and it shows you when the wind is pushing what directions. God. And then, like, I'm going to go out today, and I'm going to hear a red-winged blackbird. Oh, and it wasn't here the night before. And you go out there, and it's like, that bird flew overnight to be here. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is amazing.
It is. That bird flew all night. What did you do all night? You slept.
I slept. In my bed. Great. I don't have a reaction to this. I was like, okay, yeah, it's a birding walk. That's what you're doing. That is an accurate description.
But you're looking and you're finding things. It's like going on a magic eye adventure. You're walking along and then all of a sudden all the sticks transform and you see that owl that's lurking in there.
It is exactly like a magic eye adventure because I never see what everyone else tells me they see.
It's a little bit of magic eye, a little bit Where's Waldo? And then you realize what you're looking at. Ah, no, I'm not making shit up, but sure. Anyway, it's exciting.
Good. I'm glad you think so.
Oh, God, you're such a dude.
What else do you have?
All right, next story is, our next segment, bird jobs.
Okay.
So I wanted to bring this back because...
One, you get one.
Okay, actually, here's what I was going to talk about.
Okay.
I wanted to bring up ridiculous jobs... versus job I would consider.
Okay.
So...
One of each. That's
yeah,
all you
yeah,
get.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. That's fine. So, okay. So we're going to start with ridiculous job. And this is the reason why I want to do these segments is that as someone who worked as a freelance birder for 10 years, there are times to kind of look at jobs and times to not look at jobs. And you want to get paid a good wage. And then there are times when you have no freelance money coming in. And you need to find something to do with your time. And though you may not be able to find something to do with your time that is going to make you any money, it can make you experience that you can put on your resume.
Right.
So here's an example. Tundra nesting bird internship at Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Now you hear that. And you think, well, this sounds like an adventure. And, you know, I've always wanted to go to the Arctic. This sounds like I'll get to see things that I wouldn't normally get to see. And it could be a lot of fun. So here's what you're going to have to do. Field work will involve setup and maintenance of the remote camp, nest searching, trapping, measuring, and banding shorebirds and waterfowl, collecting tissue samples, monitoring nests with time-lapse cameras, and collecting predator and alternative prey, i.e. lemmings, data with cameras. Field assistants typically will work 7 days a week, over 10 hours a day while in the field, 5 to 6 days a week while in the Fairbanks office. Assistants will be involved in all aspects of the project. Here's where we get to the main stuff. Conditions will be generally cold. They will be windy.
Sure.
They will be buggy. Access to the site is by single-engine aircraft.
Of course.
Camp life will be remote and primitive.
Good.
During periods of bad weather, staff can be cut off from any outside help for several days.
Okay.
Assistants will be required to carry firearms in the field for brown bear protection.
Sure.
Excellent physical condition is necessary to meet the strenuous demands. Crews will be exposed to long days of hiking, 15 plus miles a day,
mm-hmm.
cold, wet, windy weather, lots of mosquitoes. In addition, crew may assist in an ongoing EIDR project by conducting nest surveys on barrier islands. That's a lot of work for
How many applicants do you think?
I'm sure it is, but at the same time, I'm frustrated because...
And here's my question. If you're going for a field biologist degree or something, do you spend your time off, like, getting this hardcore camping knowledge and, like, how to shoot a rifle and stuff so that you can, like, get these jobs? Or do you, like...
If that is your interest, yes. But I feel like that is really unreasonable to ask someone to do for no money.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, that's what you're looking for.
Okay, here we go. I did look. Compensation. These are considered, quote, volunteer positions. Assistants will receive $1,000 to $1,500 a month for a living allowance, depending on their experience and project funding. Housing in Fairbanks will be provided, as will transportation and camp food while in the field. Tents, sleeping bags, GPS will be provided. However, you must provide your own field clothes and binoculars. And as someone who owns good field clothes,
mm-hmm.
that's not cheap. I mean, to get yourself a kit that would get you through those kinds of conditions for 3 months, you're going to be spending, in some cases, almost as much as binoculars. And let me tell you, you do not want to skimp on field clothes. I mean, you can...
Sure.
I mean, you, at the very least... I mean, on the one hand, I could see myself being in my 20s and just being like, yeah, this is an adventure, I'm going to do this. But this is not going to help some poor college student that's trying to get out of debt. Yeah, you will get experience, but how many jobs will you have where they will require you to shoot brown bears for protection? I'm torn on this. On the one hand, this is an area I would like to see. These are jobs I would like to do. I just think it's criminal that the only money that we can find for these kinds of projects for a biologist is $1,000 to $1,500 a month, and oh yeah, we'll give you housing. This is really dangerous work. So,
yeah,
for me to look at that and like, oh, I don't have a lot of money right now, but I have 3 months free. Do I want to do something like this? I would probably pass on that.
So you look forward to the point where you can't take these jobs, is what you're telling me.
If I were suddenly widowed.
Oh, God.
With unlimited amounts of money from an insurance policy.
Uh-huh. That I didn't know about, but apparently had my signature on it.
I would consider that. Mm-hmm. Although, as I get older, camping is not as glamorous as it used to be. Camping in remote areas. I could do something like that for a couple weeks, but I would be looking forward to after 10 days, like, man, I really want an actual bed right now.
Yeah.
I really want to... But, okay, so maybe if I were in my 20s and widowed with unlimited amounts of money.
Okay, if you went out on this, you would be eaten by the bear, because number one, you would never shoot it.
Oh, I'd shoot a bear if it was trying to eat me. Are you kidding?
No, I don't think you would. I think you would be eaten by the bear.
You have not been... I would... If something's trying to kill me, of course I'm going to defend myself.
Okay.
I'm not going to be all Leonardo DiCaprio about it.
Well, he did kill a bear.
Okay.
And he was trying to kill a bear.
Okay.
I think you're talking about Grizzly Man.
Maybe. I don't want to be friends with the bear. Sure. If the bear's trying to eat me, that's where I draw the line.
All right, bears, you're on notice. That's the line.
But no, if an animal's trying to eat me, I would totally shoot it.
Okay.
And I'm actually pretty good at shooting, according to that time I went to that firing range.
I was there. You didn't hit. You hit slightly more shit than I did. But
no, that was
not...
the other time. That was when I got the group hunt so we could go shooting together. Yeah. But when I went with Paul, you weren't there.
What were you shooting? Televisions?
No, we were shooting targets.
Okay.
I actually got in the target. I actually got close to the center.
Okay.
With like 4 different kinds of guns.
Was it moving?
No.
Okay, well...
Well, if a bear is going to eat me, the only direction it's going to be moving is at me. So if I just shoot straight ahead, I think I'll be okay.
Can't argue with that logic.
All right, so here's another job that's out there.
Great.
This is a volunteer job.
Sure.
So, Bahamas volunteer field assistant, live aboard schooner.
Wait, you're going to live on a schooner? Okay, that's fine. Good.
Okay, so this actually, it shows up in bird jobs, which I think kind of frustrates me because it's like, you're not really a job. This mm-hmm. is a volunteer position. And this isn't a volunteer position like the other one because you're actively telling people how much it's going to cost to go on this. And there's not even the modicum of compensation that there right. was with the grizzly job.
Well, you're living on a schooner. I mean,
you're living on what's going to go wrong, really.
Yeah.
So, let's see. This group is seeking an enthusiastic volunteer field assistant for the Bahamas. And you're going to be assessing shorebird habitat and the daily field schedule and planning. You have to pay for the week $1,150. And that gets you your bunk, onboard meals, water.
Wait, how much money do you have to pay?
Like $1,100 to do this.
It sounds like a scam.
Yeah, so this is one of those things. This is what yeah. irritates me when this shows up. Because this is basically one of those volunteer vacations.
Mm-hmm.
But on the one hand, if you're someone that would like to get into field work, and you were someone who maybe, I don't know, decided when you were an undergraduate to get a theater degree instead yeah. of something else, this is a way of getting field experience and paying for okay. it. And also, it doesn't require you to carry a gun.
Okay.
But I'm frustrated that this is offered
what
on a board.
What about the sea bears?
The sea bears? The manatees? What are they going to do?
No, the sea bears. The bears that live in the sea.
There are no bears that live in the sea. Not in the Bahamas.
Not anymore. People shot them all.
Is this going to be in that dinosaur field guide?
Field guide, yeah. The sea bears that were also birds at one point.
So, yeah, basically, you're going to boat around the Bahamas, and you're going to be collecting data on shorebirds and other seabirds.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't sound that bad, but you do have to assist with sailing, cooking, and cleaning. So you also get some sailing experience while you're at it.
Great.
But I mean, this is paying to get some field work knowledge. And I feel like this is a better deal than, yeah, come out here where you might die, and you're not going to have any human contact for weeks.
See, this sounds like a piracy situation. Like, you show up and they take you out to sea, and then you have to rob other boats.
That's not included in any of the...
Well, no, they're not going to tell you that straight up front.
But you get to work in globally and locally important bird areas, like the North Atlantic Abaco Cays, North Park, important bird area.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Peterson Cay. Well, I wonder... No, you don't get to do that one. But anyway, this seems like it's an... This seems more of a legitimate thing to... I shouldn't say legitimate, because working in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge would be legitimate. I would just like to see you get some actual compensation for this dangerous work that you're about to do.
But you're not getting compensation for the other thing. You are paying them.
You're also going to get training to do that. And that allows you to put... Both of these allow you to put experiences on your resume. Mm-hmm. I feel like this one is less of a life-threatening situation. Because at the end of the day, to get up to Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, you're going to have to pay... Okay, so this one, you're paying $1,100, just a little over $1,100 to be on this boat and do all this stuff. And you're also going to have to pay for your transportation there. The same thing's going to happen with that Arctic National Wildlife Refuge job. You're still going to have to pay your transportation to get there. You're going to have to make sure to have some of your own field equipment. And you're going to pay a lot more money, I think, for that Arctic National mm-hmm. Wildlife Refuge job. And you might die. Well, you might die at both of these, but I feel like the likelihood is higher at the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge.
I'll tell you, one of them, they both sound like movies. One sounds like a survival horror movie. The other sounds like an 80s Bikini Beach movie.
And that's okay. But these, so looking at these two things, if I were like, I have no money coming in, I need to get some experience, I think I would lean towards the Bahamas job.
Yeah, but no, that's the problem, is you need to have money to take that.
There are going to be times if you are freelancing and you are going from contract to contract, seasonal job to seasonal job, where you're not going to be employed.
Mm.
And if you are not going to be making any money, the better thing to do is to find something that you can do that will help you get some experience on your resume, so then you can get those jobs that do actually pay. And so, yeah, maybe you can't go to these remote areas. Like, one of the things I did when I didn't have a lot of employment was I volunteered at Carpenter Nature Center.
Sure.
Did a little bit of everything. Did bird handling. I got some experience with songbird banding. The important thing is, when you're an unemployed biologist or ecologist or interpreter, is to find a way to build on your resume. And I guess the great thing with birding is it's so underfunded that if you're volunteering or, hell, paying to do work, it is legit stuff that you can put on your resume to get a full-time job.
Okay.
So that's that.
All right.
So final segment.
Okay.
Is ask me a question. And so this why? One, we're going to start off because people ask me questions.
No, that's all my the question.
Why? Why not?
Fair enough.
So you can email me questions at Sharon@birdchick.com.
Mm-hmm.
So to start this off, I have written down 5 questions, common questions that I've gotten in the last 2 weeks. And by common, I mean multiple people have asked me these questions. You get to pick it. So, Bill, you pick a number between 1 through 10.
1.
What is your favorite bird festival?
What is your favorite bird festival, Sharon?
That's tough to say.
Jesus Christ!
Okay.
You picked these questions.
These are common questions that I get. Oh, and that's God. Always... It depends on what you want. It depends on what you want. Okay. So I will just say as a default, like if someone said, I'm only ever going to go to one bird festival in my entire life, what should I do? My answer is always going to be the Rio Grande Valley Bird Festival down in South Texas. You get crazy birds down there. You've even been there. You've seen
it. I have been there.
What bird did you like best down there?
What was the one that we saw? It was sleeping under a bush with two of its babies.
The Paraki?
Paraki was good. Chachalacas were fun.
That's what I thought you were going to say was the chachalacas. Mm. So, but no, you get great food down in the Rio Grande Valley. It's relatively inexpensive to stay. There are just so many crazy birds. You can go any time of year. If you go during spring migration, you're going to get crazy stuff. But if you go during the festival, it's a great place to network and meet other birders that you probably chat with online all the time on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're someone who's interested in getting work in the birding industry, it's a good way to get to know people who could potentially hire you.
Okay.
But no, I would say the Rio Grande Valley Bird Festival. It's one of the largest festivals in the U.S. Yeah. So that would be... And then other ones that I would recommend... There's so many bird festivals that I love for so many different reasons. Like Klamath Falls is great for raptor watching.
Okay. I'd like to remind you, you picked these questions.
So I know, but I'm giving honest answers. Okay. But these are questions that I get all the time. And so that's why I'm just trying to throw this out there. But I just feel like I have to give nods to other festivals.
Mm-hmm.
If you are really into bird photography, then I highly recommend Space Coast Birding and Nature Festival because the birds down there are so chillaxed. And you can go to places like Viera Wetlands and take pictures of birds to your heart's content. You can go around Merritt Island and you can get pictures of spoonbills. There's a nude beach on Canaveral National Seashore, which you can get pictures there.
Yeah.
I got a sandwich turn there. And then there's Biggest Week, which if you're a party animal who's super social and you like warblers and you want to stand 10 feet away from a prothonotary warbler while surrounded by 500 birders cheek to cheek, yes, that is exactly what it's like at Biggest Week. Oh. Then that's a good one to go to. If you want something kind of quiet and small that has a lot of warblers, then I say Tawas Point Birding Festival. So those are just some birding festivals. But if I have to be narrowed down to one, then I'm going to say the Rio Grande Valley Bird Festival. And if you have a question for me that you would like me to answer on this podcast, you can email me at Sharon@birdchick.com.
All right.
And if you send me something like, why do you podcast? We'll just make fun of you.
Good.
All right.
Why do we podcast?
I don't know. It's not even like we have sponsors on a regular basis. That's why I thought maybe we should mix it up and have segments.
Okay.
And if you have an idea for a segment that we should do.
Me? Or the listeners?
You or the listeners. You can just email me at Sharon@birdchick.com.
You never reply to my emails. I think I'm in your spam folder. All right. Do you have anything else for us?
I don't know. Why don't you start doing the outro? So I can interrupt you.
No, you had like another thing you wanted to do.
I did?
Yeah, you wanted to do recommendations.
Oh, yeah, that's right. All right. So the other thing I thought we should do is recommendations. A birding recommendation or a non-birding recommendation.
Okay.
So you're the non-birder.
You start. This is your podcast.
Okay. Well, a recommendation that I have is, you know what? I'm going to recommend that waterfowl book that I just got.
Okay.
What's it called? Princeton University Press.
She's leaning back into her book bag to find this.
Not a book bag. Oh, I just said on the... Oh, that's Birds of Honduras. Actually, I'm going to switch it to that. I'm going to recommend Guide to the Birds of Honduras by Robert J. Gallardo.
Mm-hmm.
I got it in the mail because I am going to go to Honduras in about a week. Well, I don't know what's going to happen with the podcast during that, but that's what's happening. And it is written by someone who lives in Honduras, has done a lot of birding, so it's got very updated maps about where to find certain species. It also includes a two-sided map that gives you an idea of birding hotspots and the different types of habitats that are there. I don't think this is something I'm going to be carrying with me out in the field, but as far as studying birds that I'm potentially going to see in Honduras, it's really quite good.
All right. I'm going to recommend a book called Birds, Bird Ringing, The Art of Bird Study by Individual Marking by R.M. Lockley. It was a book that was chosen by our rabbit. He pulled it off the shelf and was chewing on it.
And this is your non-birding recommendation?
It shows you how to trap birds. Yes, it's a rabbit recommendation.
I thought you were going to recommend like a movie or a game or something.
No, I don't have anything to recommend. I don't have anything for people to...
All
this
right,
is a birding podcast.
Then I'm going to take over that. Okay. Because I wanted you to have like a non-birding thing to recommend to people.
No, it's the Bird Chick podcast.
Yeah, okay. Well, then I'm going to recommend something non-birding.
Okay.
I'm going to recommend X-Wing Miniatures.
Okay, good. Good pick.
That is a fantastic game. Yep. It's a two-person game. Although you could probably play it with more than two people and make up teams. One of you plays the Empire. One of you plays the Rebel Alliance. Mm-hmm. The ships are so cool. Basically, this is a game that gives adults an excuse to play with Star Wars spaceships.
Yes.
And you get to blow each other up.
You do. It's fun.
It's really fun. That is my favorite non-birding activity to do right now. So for a non-birding activity, if you want to seem like a regular person and interact with people out there and people are like, hey, what are you doing?
You want something less nerdy to do than bird watching, play Star Wars next week.
Anyone who sees the ships are like, oh, wow, that's really cool.
They are very cool.
As a matter of fact, someone just asked me yesterday. It was like after I finished doing a program. It's like, ah, what are your plans this weekend? It's like, I'm going to go home and drink and I'm going to play X-Wing Miniatures with my husband. And, oh, that sounds really cool. It's like, I know. We get to like move around and blow each other up. And, you know, you start off with a basic kit and you get like a couple of TIE fighters and an X-Wing. But then you can get other ships out of that. Like, I now have a Slave One, which is Boba Fett's ship. What do you have?
I have the Millennium Falcon.
What's the other ship that you have that you really wanted?
The A-Wing and the B-Wing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Pretty cool.
I don't know. I don't play the Rebel Alliance. I really like the Imperial ships. So that's my recommendation is X-Wing Miniatures from Fantasy Flight Games.
All right. This is Bird Chick Podcast number 205. If you have any questions, you can email Sharon. She is Sharon@birdchick.com. And we will be back later to talk to you. Bye-bye.